It's very lucky, ne? I hear you pulled Toranaga-sama out of a death trap. We're all grateful to you, Anjin-san. Very. If we'd lost him. Lord Toranaga said he accepted your sword. You're lucky. That's a great honor. Yes. Your karma's strong. Very good. Very rich. Yes. We thank you very much. Listen. We'll talk more after you've bathed. I'm glad to have you as a friend.
Omi called out for the bath attendants.
Ishogi!
Hurry up. The servants escorted Blackthorn to the bathhouse, which was set within a tiny maple grove and joined to the main house by a neat winding walk, usually roofed. The bath was much more luxurious than his own. One wall was cracked badly, but villagers were already replastering it. The roof was sound, although a few tiles were missing, and rain leaked in here and there, but that did not matter. Blackthorn stripped and sat on the tiny seat. The servants lathered him and shampooed him in the rain. When he was cleansed, he went inside and immersed himself in the steaming bath. All his troubles melted away.
Ujiko's going to be all right. I'm a lucky man. Lucky I was there to pull Toranaga out. Lucky to save Mariko. And lucky he was there to pull us out.
Suo's magic renewed him as usual. Later, he let Suo dress his bruises and cuts and put on the clean loincloth and kimono and tabi that had been left for him, and went out. The rain had stopped. A temporary lean-to had been erected in one corner of the garden. It had a neat raised floor and was furnished with clean futons and a little vase with a flower arrangement. Omi was waiting for him, and in attendance was a toothless, hard-faced old woman.
"Please sit down, Anjin-san,"
Omi said.
"Thank you, and thanks for the clothes," he replied, in halting Japanese. "Please, don't mention it. Would you like cha or sake?"
"Cha," Blackthorn decided, thinking that he had better keep his head clear for his interview with Toranaga.
"Thank you." "This is my mother," Omi said formally, clearly idolizing her.
Blackthorn bowed. The old woman simpered and sucked in her breath.
"It's my honor, Anjin-san," she said.
"Thank you, but I'm honored."
Blackthorn repeated automatically the succession of formal politenesses that Mariko had taught him.
"Anjin-san, we were so sorry to see your house in flames."
"What could one do? That's karma, eh?"
"Yes, karma."
The old woman looked away and scowled.
"Hurry up! The Anjin-san wants his cha warm!"
The girl standing beside the maid who carried the tray took Blackthorn's breath away. Then he remembered her. Wasn't this the girl he'd seen with Omi the first time when he was passing through the village square on his way to the galley?
"This is my wife," Omi said tersely. "I'm honored," Blackthorn said, as she took her place, knelt, and bowed.
"You must forgive her slowness," Omi's mother said. "Is the cha warm enough for you?"
"Thank you. It's very good."
Blackthorn had noted that the old woman had not used the wife's name as she should have. But then, he was not surprised because Mariko had told him already about the dominating position of a girl's mother-in-law in Japanese society.
"Thank God it's not the same in Europe," he had told her.
"A wife's mother-in-law can do no wrong. After all, Anjin-san, the parents choose the wife in the first place. And what father would choose without first consulting his own wife? Of course, the daughter-in-law has to obey, and the son always does what his mother and father want."
"Always?"
"Always."
"What if the son refuses?"
"That's not possible. Everyone has to obey the head of the house. A son's first duty is to his parents." "Of course. Sons are given everything by their mothers. Life, food, tenderness, protection. She suckers them all their lives. So of course it's right that a son should heed his mother's wishes. The daughter-in-law, she has to obey. That's her duty."
"It's not the same with us."
"It's hard to be a good daughter-in-law. Very hard. You just have to hope that you live long enough to have sons to become one yourself.
And your mother-in-law?
Ah, she's dead, Anjin-san. She died many years ago. I never knew her. Lord Hiromatsu, in his wisdom, never took another wife.
Buntaro-san's his only son?
Yes. My husband has 5 living sisters, but no brothers.
She had joked,
In a way, we're related now, Anjin-san. Ujiko's my husband's niece. What's the matter?
I'm surprised you never told me, that's all.
Well, it's complicated, Anjin-san.
Then Mariko had explained that Ujiko was actually an adopted daughter of Numata Akinori, who had married Buntaro's youngest sister, and that Hujiko's real father was a grandson of the dictator Gorodo by his 8th consort. That Ujiko had been adopted by Numata when an infant at the Taiko's orders, because the Taiko wanted closer ties between the descendants of Hiromatsu and Gorodo.
What?
Mariko had laughed, telling him that, yes, Japanese family relations were very complicated, because adoption was normal, that families exchanged sons and daughters often, and divorced and remarried and intermarried all the time. With so many legal consorts and the ease of divorce, particularly if at the order of a liege lord, all families soon became incredibly tangled.
To unravel Lord Torunaga's family links accurately would take days, Anjin-san. Just think of the complications. Presently, he has 7 official consorts living, who have given him 5 sons and 3 daughters. Some of the consorts were widows or previously married with other sons and daughters. Some of these Torunaga adopted, some he did not. In Japan, you don't ask if a person is adopted or natural. Truly, what does it matter? Inheritance is always at the whim of the head of the house, so adopted or not, it is the same, eh? Even Torunaga's mother was divorced. Later she remarried and had 3 more sons and 2 daughters by her 2nd husband, all of whom are also now married. Her eldest son from her 2nd marriage is Zateki, Lord Oshinano.
Blackthorn had mulled that. Then he had said,
Divorce isn't possible for us. Not possible.
So the Holy Fathers tell us. So sorry, but that's not very sensible, Anjin-san. Mistakes happen. People change. That's karma, eh? Why should a man have to bear a foul wife, or a wife a foul man? Foolish to be stuck forever, man or woman, eh?
Yes.
In this, we are very wise, and the Holy Fathers unwise. This was one of the 2 great reasons the Taiko would not embrace Christianity, this foolishness about divorce, and the 6th commandment, thou shalt not kill. The father visitor sent all the way to Rome, begging dispensation for Japanese about divorce. But His Holiness the Pope, in his wisdom, said no. If His Holiness had said yes, I believe the Taiko would have converted. The daimyos would be following the true faith now, and the land would be Christian. The matter of killing would have been unimportant, because no one pays any attention to that, really. Christians least of all. Such a little concession, for so much, ne?
Yes, Blackthorn had said. How sensible divorce seemed here. Why was it a mortal sin at home, opposed by every priest in Christendom, Catholic or Protestant, in the name of God? What's Torunaga's wife like? He had asked, wanting to keep her talking.
Most of the time she avoided the subject of Torunaga and his family history, and it was important for Blackthorn to know everything. A shadow had crossed Mariko's face.
She's dead. She was his 2nd wife, and she died 10 or 11 years ago. She was the Taiko's stepsister. Lord Torunaga was never successful with his wives, Anjin-san.
Why?
Oh, the 2nd was old and tired and grasping, worshipping gold, though pretending not to, like her brother, the Taiko himself. Barren and bad-tempered. It was a political marriage, of course. I had to be one of her ladies-in-waiting for a time. Nothing would please her, and none of the youths or men could unwind the knot in her golden pavilion.
What?
Her jade gate, Anjin-san, with their turtle heads, their steaming shafts. Don't you understand? Her thing.
Oh, I understand. Yes.
No one could unwind her knot, could satisfy her.
Not even Toranaga?
He never pillowed her, Anjin-san,
she had said, quite shocked.
Of course, after the marriage, he had nothing to do with her, other than give her a castle and retainers, and the keys to his treasure house. Why should he?
She was quite old. She had been married twice before. But her brother, the Taiko, had dissolved the marriages.
A most unpleasant woman. Everyone was most relieved when she went into the great void, even the Taiko. And all her stepdaughters-in-law and all of Toranaga's consorts secretly burnt incense with great joy.
And Toranaga's first wife?
Ah, the Lady Tachibana. That was another political marriage. Lord Toranaga was 18, she 15. She grew up to be a terrible woman. 20 years ago, Toranaga had her put to death because he discovered she was secretly plotting to assassinate their liege lord, the dictator Gododa, whom she hated. My father often told me he thought they were all lucky to retain their heads. He, Toranaga, Nakamura, and all the generals, because Gododa was merciless, relentless, and particularly suspicious of those closest to him. That woman could have ruined them all, however innocent they were. Because of her plot against Lord Gododa, her only son, Nobunaga, was also put to death, Anjin-san. She killed her own son. Think of that. So sad. So terrible. Poor Nobunaga. He was Toranaga's favorite son and his official heir. Brave, a general in his own right, and totally loyal. He was innocent, but she still embroiled him in her plot. He was only 19 when Toranaga ordered him to commit seppuku.
Toranaga killed his own son? And his wife?
Yes, he ordered them onward, but he had no choice, Anjin-san. If he hadn't, Lord Gororda would correctly have presumed Toranaga to be part of the plot himself, and would have ordered him instantly to slit his belly. Oh, yes. Toranaga was lucky to escape Gororda's wrath, and wise to send her onward quickly. When she was dead, her daughter-in-law and all Toranaga's consorts were very much ecstatic. Her son had had to send his first wife home in disgrace on her orders for some imagined slight, after bearing him 2 children. The girl committed seppuku. Did I tell you ladies commit seppuku by slitting their throats, Anjin-san, and not their stomachs like men? But she went to death gratefully, glad to be freed from a life of tears, as the next wife prayed for death, her life made equally miserable by her mother-in-law.
Now, looking at Midori's mother-in-law, the tea dribbling down her chin, Blackthorn knew that this old hag had power of life or death, divorce or degradation over Midori, provided her husband, the head of their house, agreed. And whatever they decided, Omi would obey.
How terrible, he told himself.
Midori was as graceful and youthful as the old woman was not, her face oval, her hair rich. She was more beautiful than Mariko, but without her fire and strength, pliant as a fern and fragile as gossamer.
Where are the small foods? Of course, the Anjin-san must be hungry, ne?
The old woman said.
Oh, so sorry,
Midori replied at once.
Fetch some instantly, she said to the maid. Hurry. So sorry, Anjin-san. So sorry, Anjin-san.
Please don't apologize,
Blackthorn said to Midori, and instantly knew that it was a mistake. Good manners decreed that he should acknowledge only the mother-in-law, particularly if she had an evil reputation.
So sorry, he said. I not hungry. Tonight I eat must with Lord Toranaga.
Ah, so death. We heard you saved his life. You should know how grateful we are. All his vassals,
the old woman said.
It was duty. I did nothing.
You did everything, Anjin-san. Omi-san and Lord Yabu appreciate your action as much as all of us.
Blackthorn saw the old woman looking at her son.
I wish I could fathom you, you old bitch, he thought. Are you as evil as that other one, Tachibana?
Omi said,
Mother, I'm fortunate to have the Anjin-san as a friend.
We're all fortunate, she said.
No, I'm fortunate, Blackthorn replied. I'm fortunate to have friends as family of Koshigi Omi-san. We're all lying, Blackthorn thought. But I don't know why you are. I'm lying for self-protection and because it's custom. But I've never forgotten.
Wait a moment. In all honesty, wasn't that karma?
Wouldn't you have done what Omi did?
That was long ago. In a previous life, ne? It's meaningless now.
A group of horsemen clattered up the rise, Naga at their head. He dismounted and strode into the garden. All the villagers stopped working and went onto their knees. He motioned them to continue.
So sorry to disturb you, Omi-san, but Lord Toranaga sent me.
Please, you're not disturbing me.
Please join us, Omi said.
Midori at once gave up her cushion, bowing very low.
Would you like cha or sake, Naga-sama?
Naga sat.
Neither, thank you. I'm not thirsty.
Omi pressed him politely, going through the interminable necessary ritual, even though it was obvious that Naga was in a hurry.
How is the Lord Toranaga?
Very good.
Anjin-san, you did us a great service.
Yes,
I thank you personally.
It was duty, Naga-san, but I did little. Lord Toranaga pulled me from Earth also.
Yes, but that was afterward. I thank you very much.
Naga-san, is there something I can do for Lord Toranaga?
Omi asked, etiquette finally allowing him to come to the point.
He would like to see you after the evening meal. There is to be a full conference of all officers.
I would be honored.
Anjin-san, you are to come with me now, if it pleases you.
Of course, it is my honor.
More bows and salutations, and then Blackthorn was on a horse, and they were cantering down the hill. When the phalanx of samurai came to the square, Naga reined in.
Anjin-san.
Aye?
I thank you with all my heart for saving Lord Toranaga. Allow me to be your friend.
And some words Blackthorn did not catch.
So sorry, I don't understand. Karite iru?
Ah, so sorry.
Karite iru. One man karite iru, another man things. Like debt. You understand debt?
Oh, jumped into Blackthorn's head.
Ah, so des. Wakarimas.
Good. I only said that I owed you a debt.
It was my duty, ne?
Yes. Even so, I owe you a life.
Toranaga-sama says all cannon powder and shot were put back on your ship, Anjin-san, here at Anjiro, before it left for Edo. He asks you how long it would take you to get ready for sea.
That depends on her state, if the men have careened her and cared for her, the mast replaced, and so on. Does Lord Toranaga know how she is?
The ship seems in order, he says, but he's not a seaman, so he couldn't be sure. He has not been on it since it was first towed into Edo Harbor, when he gave instructions for it to be cared for. Presuming the ship is seaworthy, nay? He asks, how long would it take you to ready for war?
Blackthorn's heart missed a beat.
On whom do I war, Mariko-san?
He asks, on whom would you wish to war?
This year's black ship,
Blackthorn replied at once, making a sudden decision, desperately hoping that this was the correct moment to place before Toranaga the plan he'd secretly developed over the days. He was gambling that saving Toranaga's life this morning gave him a special privilege that would help him over the rough spots. Mariko was taken by surprise.
What?
The black ship. Tell Lord Toranaga that all he has to do is give me his letters of mark. I'll do the rest. With my ship and just a little help. We split the cargo, all silks and bullion.
She laughed. Toranaga did not.
My master says that would be an unforgivable act of war against a friendly nation.
The Portuguese are essential to Japan.
Yes, they are, at the moment. But I believe they're his enemy as well as mine, and whatever service they provide, we can do better, at less cost.
He says, perhaps. But he does not believe China will trade with you. Neither the English nor the Netherlanders are in strength in Asia yet, and we need the silks now and a continuing supply.
He's right, of course. But in a year or two that will change, and he'll have his proof then. So here's another suggestion. I'm already at war with the Portuguese. Outside the 3-mile limit are international waters. Legally, with my present letters of marque, I can take her as a prize, and I can sail her to any port and sell her and her cargo. With my ship and a crew, it'll be easy. In a few weeks or months, I could deliver the black ship and all she contains to Edo. I could sell her in Edo. Half the value'll be his. A port tax.
He says, what happens at sea between you and your enemies is of little concern to him. The sea belongs to all. But this land is ours, and here our laws govern, and our laws may not be broken.
Yes. Blackthorn knew his course was dangerous, but his intuition told him the timing was perfect, and that Torunaga would take the bait. And Mariko. It was only a suggestion. He asked me on whom I'd like to war. Please excuse me, but sometimes it's good to plan against any eventuality. In this, I believe Lord Torunaga's interests are mine.
Mariko translated this. Torunaga grunted and spoke shortly.
Lord Torunaga values sensible suggestions, Anjin-san, like your point about a navy. But this is ludicrous. Even if both your interests were the same, which they're not, how could you and 9 men attack such a huge vessel with nearly 1,000 persons aboard?
I wouldn't. I have to get a new crew, Mariko-san. 80 or 90 men, trained seamen and gunners. I'll find them at Nagasaki on Portuguese ships.
Blackthorn pretended not to notice her intake of breath or the way her fan stopped.
They've got to be a few Frenchies, an Englishman or two if I'm lucky, some Germans or Hollanders. They'll be renegades mostly, or pressed aboard. I'd need a safe conduct to Nagasaki, some protection, and a little silver or gold. There are always seamen in enemy fleets who'll sign on for ready cash and a share of prize money.
My master says anyone in command who'd trust such carrion in an attack would be mad.
Blackthorn said, I agree, but I have to have a crew to put to sea.
He asks if it would be possible to train samurai and our seamen to be gunners and sailors.
Easily, in time. But that could take months. They'd certainly be ready by next year. There'd be no chance to go against this year's black ship.
Lord Torunaga says, I don't plan to attack the black ship of the Portuguese this year or next. They're not my enemies, and I am not at war with them.
I know, but I am at war with them. Please excuse me. Of course, this is only a discussion, but I'll have to get some men to put to sea, to be of service to Lord Torunaga, if he wishes.
They were sitting in Torunaga's private quarters that overlooked the garden. The fortress had hardly been touched by the quake. The night was humid and airless, and the smoke from the coils of incense rose lazily to banish the mosquitoes.
My master wants to know, Mariko was saying, if you had your ship now, and the few crew members that arrived with you, would you sail it to Nagasaki to get these further men you require?
No. That would be too dangerous. I'd be so hopelessly undermanned that the Portuguese would capture me. It would be much better to get the men first, bring them back to home waters, to Edo, eh? Once I'm full crewed and armed, the enemy's got nothing in these seas to touch me.
He does not think you and 90 men could take the black ship.
I can outsail her and sink her with Erasmus. Of course, Mariko-san, I know this is all conjecture, but if I was permitted to attack my enemy, the moment I was crewed, I'd sail on the tide for Nagasaki. If the black ship was already in port, I'd show my battle flags and stand out to sea to blockade her. I'd let her finish trading
and then, when the wind was ripe for her homeward voyage, I'd pretend to need supplies and let her slip out of port. I'd catch her a few leagues out, because we've the speed on her, and my cannon would do the rest. Once she struck her colours, I put a prize crew aboard and bring her back to Edo. She'll have upwards of 300, almost 400 tons of gold bullion aboard.
But why won't her captain scuttle his ship once you've beaten him, if you beat him, before you can go aboard?
Usually, Blackthorn was going to say, usually the crew mutiny if the captain's a fanatic, but I've never known one that mad. Most times you make a deal with the captain. Spare their lives, give them a small share, and safe berth to the nearest port. But this time, I'll have Rodriguez to deal with, and I know him, and know what he'll do. But he thought better about that, or about revealing his whole plan. Best to leave barbarian ways to barbarians, he told himself. Usually, the defeated ship gives up, Mariko-san, he said instead. It's a custom. One of our customs of war at sea, saving unnecessary loss of life.
Lord Torinaga says, so sorry, Anjin-san. That's a disgusting custom. If he had ships, there would be no surrender.
Mariko sipped some cha, then continued.
And if the ship is not yet in port?
Then I sweep the sea lanes to catch her a few leagues out in international waters. She'll be easier to take heavy laden and wallowing, but harder to bring into Edo. When she's expected to dock?
My lord does not know. Perhaps within 30 days, he says. The ship will be early this year.
Blackthorn knew he was so near the prize, so very near. Then it's blockade her and take her at the end of the season. She translated, and Blackthorn thought he saw disappointment momentarily cross Torinaga's face. He paused as though he were considering alternatives. Then he said, if this was Europe, there'd be another way. You could sail in by night and take her by force. A surprise attack. Torinaga's grip tightened on his sword hilt.
He says you dare to war on our land against your enemies?
Blackthorn's lips were dry. No, of course this is still surmise. But if a state of war existed between him and the Portuguese, and Lord Torinaga wanted them hurt, this would be the way to do it. If I had 200 or 300 well-disciplined fighters, a good crew, and Erasmus, it would be easy to go alongside the black ship and board her, drag her out to sea. He could choose the time of the surprise attack. If this was Europe. There was a long silence.
Lord Torinaga says, this is not Europe, and no state of war exists or will ever exist between him and the Portuguese.
Of course. One last point, Mariko-san. Nagasaki is not within Lord Torinaga's control, is it?
No, Anjin-san. Lord Harima owns the port and the hinterland.
But don't the Jesuits in practice control the port and all trade? Blackthorn marked her reluctance to translate, but kept up the pressure. Isn't that the Honto, Mariko-san? And isn't Lord Harima Catholic? Isn't most of Kyushu Catholic? And therefore don't the Jesuits in some measure control the whole island?
Christianity's a religion. The daimyos control their own lands, Anjin-san,
Mariko said for herself. But I was told Nagasaki's really Portuguese soil. I'm told they act as though it is. Didn't Lord Harima's father sell the land to the Jesuits? Mariko's voice sharpened.
Yes, but the Taiko took the land back. No foreigners allowed to own land here now.
But didn't the Taiko allow his edicts to lapse, so today nothing happens there without Jesuit approval? Don't Jesuits control all shipping in Nagasaki and all trade? Don't Jesuits negotiate all trade for you and act as intermediaries?
You're very well informed about Nagasaki, Anjin-san, she said pointedly.
Perhaps Lord Torinaga should take control of the port from the enemy. Perhaps...
They're your enemy, Anjin-san, not ours, she said,
taking the bait at last.
The Jesuits are...
Nanja! She turned apologetically to Torinaga and explained what had been said between them.
When she had finished, he spoke severely, a clear reprimand.
"Hi,"
she said several times, and bowed, chastened. Mariko said,
"Lord Torunaga reminds me my opinions are valueless, and that an interpreter should interpret only, eh? Please excuse me."
Once, Blackthorn would have apologized for trapping her. Now it did not occur to him. But since he had made his point, he laughed and said,
"Hai, kawaii, Tsukuko-sama."
"Yes, pretty lady interpreter." Mariko smiled wryly, furious at herself for being trapped, her mind in conflict over her divided loyalties.
"Yoi, Anjin-san,"
Torunaga said, once more genial.
"Mariko-san, kawaii, desyori, Tsuko-san, anamsu ka norimasen, ne?"
And Mariko's much prettier than old Mr. Tsuko, isn't she? And so much more fragrant. Torunaga laughed.
"Hai!"
Mariko blushed and poured tea, a little mollified. Then Torunaga spoke, seriously.
"Our master says, why were you asking so many questions, or making statements, about Lord Harima and Nagasaki?"
"Only to show that the port of Nagasaki is in fact controlled by foreigners, by the Portuguese. And by my law, I have the legal right to attack the enemy anywhere."
"But this is not anywhere," he says. "This is the land of the gods, and such an attack is unthinkable."
"I agree wholeheartedly. But if ever Lord Harima became hostile, or the Jesuits who led the Portuguese become hostile, this is the way to hurt them."
"Lord Torunaga says neither he nor any daimyo would ever permit an attack by one foreign nation on another on Japanese soil, or the killing by them of any of our people. Against enemies of the emperor, that is a different matter. As to getting fighters and crew, it would be easy for a man to get any number if he spoke Japanese. There are many wako in Kyushu."
"Wako, Mariko-san?"
"Oh, so sorry. We call corsairs wako, Anjin-san. They used to have many lairs around Kyushu, but they were mostly stamped out by the Taiko. Survivors can still be found, unfortunately. Wako terrorized the coasts of China for centuries. It was because of them that China closed her ports to us."
She explained to Torunaga what had been said. He spoke again, more emphatically.
"He says he will never allow or plan or permit you to make a land attack, though it would be correct for you to harry your queen's enemy on the high seas. He repeats, this is not anywhere. This is the land of the gods. You should be patient, as he told you before."
"Yes, I intend to try to be patient in his fashion. I only want to hit the enemy because they are the enemy. I believe with all my heart they're his enemy too."
"Lord Torunaga says the Portuguese tell him you are his enemy, and Tsuko-san and the visitor general are absolutely sure of it."
"If I were able to capture the black ship at sea and bring her as a legal prize into Edo under the flag of England, would I be permitted to sell her and all she contains in Edo, according to our custom?"
"Lord Torunaga says that depends."
"If war comes, may I be allowed to attack the enemy, Lord Torunaga's enemy, in the best way that I can?"
"He says that is the duty of a Hatamoto. A Hatamoto is, of course, under his personal orders at all times. My master wants me to make clear that things in Japan will never be solved by any method other than by Japanese method."
"Yes, I understand completely. With due humility, I'd like to point out the more I know about his problems, the more I might be able to help."
"He says a Hatamoto's duty is always to help his lord, Anjin-san. He says I am to answer any reasonable questions you have later."
"Thank you. May I ask him, would he like to have a navy of his own, as I suggested on the galley?"
"He has already said he would like a navy, a modern navy, Anjin-san, manned by his own men. What daimyo wouldn't?"
"Then say this. If I were lucky enough to take the enemy's ship, I'd bring her to Edo to refit and count the prize. Then I'd transship my half of the bullion to Erasmus and sell the black ship back to the Portuguese, or offer her to Toranaga-sama as a gift, or burn her, whatever he wishes. Then I'd sail home. Within a year, I'd turn around and bring back 4 warships as a gift from the Queen of England to Lord Toranaga.
He asks, where would be your profit in this?
The honto is, there would be plenty left over for me, Mariko-san, after the ships were paid for by Her Majesty. Further, I'd like to take one of his most trusted counselors with me as an ambassador to my queen. A treaty of friendship between our countries might be of interest to him.
Lord Toranaga says that would be much too generous of your queen. He adds, but if such a thing miraculously happened, and you came back with the new ships, who would train his sailors and samurai and captains to man them?
I will, initially, if that pleases him. I'd be honored. Then others could follow.
He says, what is initially?
2 years.
Toranaga smiled fleetingly.
Our master says 2 years would not be enough initially. However, he adds, it's all an illusion. He's not at war with the Portuguese or Lord Harima of Nagasaki. He repeats, what you do outside Japanese waters in your own ship with your own crew is your own karma.
Mariko seemed disturbed.
Outside our waters, you are foreigner, he says. But here, you are samurai.
Yes, I know the honor he has done to me. May I ask how a samurai borrows money, Mariko-san?
From a moneylender, Anjin-san? Where else? From a filthy merchant moneylender.
She translated for Toranaga.
Why should you need money?
Are there moneylenders in Edo?
Oh, yes. Moneylenders are everywhere, nay? Isn't it the same in your country? Ask your consort, Anjin-san. Perhaps she would be able to help you. That is part of her duty.
You said we're leaving for Edo tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow.
Unfortunately, Hujiko-san won't be able to travel then.
Mariko talked with Toranaga.
Lord Toranaga says he will send her by galley when it leaves. He says, what do you need to borrow money for?
I'll have to get a new crew, Mariko-san, to sail anywhere, to serve Lord Toranaga, however he'd wish it. Is that permitted?
A crew from Nagasaki?
Yes.
He will give you an answer when you reach Edo.
Domo, Toranaga-sama. Mariko-san, when I get to Edo, where do I go? Will there be someone to guide me?
Oh, you must never worry about things like that, Anjin-san. You are one of Lord Toranaga's hatamoto.
There was a knock on the inner door.
Come in.
Naga opened the shoji and bowed.
Excuse me, father, but you wanted to be told when all your officers were present. Thank you. I'll be there shortly.
Toranaga thought a moment, then motioned to Blackthorn, his manner friendly.
Anjin-san. Go with Naga-san. He will show you to your place. Thank you for your views.
Yes, sire.
Thank you for listen. Thank you for your words. Yes. I try hard, be patient and perfect. Thank you, Anjin-san.
Toranaga watched him bow and go away. When they were alone, he turned to Mariko.
Well, what do you think?
2 things, sire. First, his hatred of Jesuits is measureless, even surpassing his loathing of Portuguese. So he is a scourge for you to use against either or both, if you want a scourge. We know he is brave, so he would boldly press home any attack from the sea. Second, money is still his goal. In his defense, from what I've learned, money is the only real means the barbarians have to lasting power. They buy lands and position. Even their queen's a merchant and sells land to her lords and buys ships and lands, probably. They're not so different from us, Lord, except in that. And also in that they do not understand power, or that war is life and life is death.
Are the Jesuits my enemy?
I do not believe so.
The Portuguese?
I believe they're concerned only with profits, land, and spreading the word of God.
Are Christians my enemy?
No, sire, though some of your enemies may be Christian, Catholic, or Protestant.
Ah, you think the Anjensan's my enemy?
No, sire. No, I believe he honors you, and in time will become a real vassal.
What about our Christians? Who are enemy?
Lords Harima, Kiyama, Onoshi, and any other samurai who turns against you.
Torunaga laughed.
Yes, but do the priests control them, as the Anjensan implies?
I do not think so.
Will those three go against me?
I don't know, sire. In the past, they've all been hostile and friendly to you. But if they side with Ishido, it would be very bad.
I agree. Yes, you're a valued counselor. It's difficult for you being Catholic Christian, being friends with an enemy, listening to enemy ideas.
Yes, sire.
He trapped you, eh?
Yes, but in truth, he had the right. I was not doing what you had ordered. I was putting myself between his pure thoughts and you. Please accept my apologies.
It will continue to be difficult. Perhaps even more so.
Yes, sir. But it's better to know both sides of the coin. Much of what he said has been found to be true. For instance, about the world being split by Spaniards and Portuguese. About the priests smuggling guns. However impossible it is to believe. You need never fear about my loyalty, sire. However bad it becomes, I will always do my duty to you.
Thank you. Well, it's been very interesting, what the Anjensan said, eh? Interesting, but nonsense. Yes. Thank you, Mariko-san. You're a valued counselor. Shall I order you divorce from Buntaro?
Sire?
Well?
Oh, to be free, her spirit sang. Oh, Madonna, to be free! Remember who you are, Mariko. Remember what you are. And remember that love is a barbarian word.
Torunaga was watching her in the great silence. Outside, mosquitoes strayed into the spirals of incense smoke to dart away to safety.
Yes, he brooded. She's a falcon. But what prey do I cast her against?
No, sire, Mariko said at last. Thank you, sire, but no.
The Anjensan's a strange man, eh? His head is filled with dreams. Ridiculous to consider attacking our friends the Portuguese, or their black ship. Nonsense to believe what he says about 4 ships or 20.
Mariko hesitated.
If he says a navy is possible, sire, then I believe it's possible.
I don't agree, Torunaga said emphatically. But you're right that he's a balance against the others, him and his fighting ship. How curious, but how illuminating. It's as Omi said. At the moment, we need the barbarians, to learn from them. And there's much yet to learn, particularly from him, eh?
Yes.
It's time to open up the empire, Mariko-san. Ishido will close it as tight as an oyster. If I were president of the regents again, I'd make treaties with any nation, so long as it's friendly. I'd send men to learn from other nations, yes, and I'd send ambassadors. This man's queen would be a good beginning. For a queen, perhaps I should send a woman ambassador, if she were clever enough.
She would have to be very strong and very clever, sire.
Yes, it would be a dangerous journey.
All journeys are dangerous, sire. Mariko said,
yes.
Again, Torunaga switched without warning.
If the Anjensan sailed away with his ship weighed with gold, would he come back? He himself?
After a long time, she said,
I don't know.
Torunaga decided not to press her now.
Thank you, Mariko-san, he said in friendly dismissal. I want you to be present at the meeting. To translate what I say for the Anjensan.
Everything, sire?
Yes. And tonight, when you go to the tea house to buy Kiku's contract, take the Anjin-san with you. Tell his consort to make the arrangements. He needs rewarding, eh?
Hi.
When she was at the shoji, Toranaga said,
Once the issue between Ishido and myself is settled, I will order you divorced.
Her hand tightened on the screen. She nodded slightly in acknowledgement. But she did not look back. The door closed after her.
Toranaga watched the smoke for a moment, then got up and walked into the garden to the privy and squatted. When he had finished and had used the paper, he heard a servant slide the container away from beneath the hole to replace it with a clean one. The mosquitoes were droning, and he slapped them absently. He was thinking of falcons and hawks, knowing that even the greatest falcons make mistakes, as Ishido had made a mistake, and Kiri, and Mariko, and Omi, and even the Anjin-san. The 150 officers were aligned in neat rows, Yabu, Omi, and Buntoro in front. Mariko knelt near Blackthorn to the side. Toranaga marched in with his personal guards and sat on the lonely cushion facing them. He acknowledged their bows, then informed them briefly of the essence of the dispatch and laid before them, for the first time publicly, his ultimate battle plan. Again, he withheld the part that related to the secret and carefully planned insurrections, and also the fact that the attack would take the northern and not the southern coastal road. And, to general acclaim, for all his warriors were glad that at last there was an end to uncertainty. He told them that when the rain ceased, he would issue the code words, Crimson Sky, which would launch them on their attack.
Meanwhile, I expect Ishido illegally to convene a new council of regents. I expect to be falsely impeached. I expect war to be declared on me, against the law.
He leaned forward, his left fist characteristically bunched on his thigh, the other tight on his sword.
Listen, I uphold the Taiko's testament and acknowledge my nephew Yeimon as Kampaku and heir to the Taiko. I desire no other lands. I want no other honors. But if traitors attack me, I must defend myself. If traitors dupe His Imperial Highness and attempt to assume power in the land, it is my duty to defend the Emperor and banish evil. Eh?
A roar of approval greeted this. Battle cries of Kashigi and Toranaga poured through the room, to be echoed throughout the fortress.
The attack regiment will be prepared to embark on the galleys for Edo. Toda Buntaro-san commanding, Kashigi Omi-san second in command, within 5 days. Lord Kashigi Yabu, you will please mobilize Izu and order 6,000 men to the frontier passes in case the traitor Ikawa Jikyu swoops south to cut our lines of communication. When the rains cease, Ishido will attack the Kanto.
Omi, Yabu, and Buntaro all silently agreed with Toranaga's wisdom of withholding information about this afternoon's decision to launch the attack in the rainy season, at once.
That will create a sensation, Omi told himself, his bowels churning at the thought of warring in the rains through the mountains of Shinano. Our guns will force a way through, Yabu had said so enthusiastically this afternoon.
Yes, Omi had agreed, having no confidence in the plan, but no alternative to offer.
It's madness, he told himself, though he was delighted that he had been promoted to second in command. I don't understand how Toranaga can conceive that there's any chance of success in the northern route. There isn't any, he told himself again,
and half closed his ears to Toranaga's stirring exhortation in order to allow himself to concentrate once more on the problem of his revenge.
Certainly the attack on Shinano will give you a dozen opportunities to manipulate Yabu into the front line at no risk to yourself. War, any war, will be to your advantage, provided the war's not lost.
Then he heard Toranaga say,
Today I was almost killed. Today the Anjin-san pulled me out of the earth. That's the second time, perhaps even the third, that he saved my life. My life is nothing against the future of my clan, and who is to say whether I would have lived or died without his help? But though it is Bushido that vassals should never expect a reward for any service, it is the duty of a liege lord to grant favours from time to time.
Amid general acclaim, Toranaga said,
Anjin-san, sit here. Mariko-san, you as well.
Jealously, Omi watched the towering man rise and kneel at the spot to which Toranaga had motioned, beside him. And there was not a man in the room who did not wish that he himself had had the good fortune to have done what the barbarian had done.
The Anjin-san is given a fief near the fishing village of Yokohama, to the south of Edo, worth 2,000 koku yearly, the right to recruit 200 samurai retainers, full rights as samurai and hatamoto to the house of Yoshi Toranaga no Chikitada Minowara. Further, he is to receive 10 horses, 20 kimonos, together with full battle equipment for his vassals, the rank of chief admiral and pilot of the Kanto.
Toranaga waited until Mariko had translated. Then he called out,
Naga-san!
Obediently, Naga brought the silk-covered package to Toranaga. Toranaga threw off the cover. There were two matching swords, one short, the other a killing sword.
Noticing that the earth had swallowed my swords and that I was unarmed, the Anjin-san went down into the crevasse again to find his own to give it to me. Anjin-san, I give these in return. They were made by the master craftsman, Yoriya. Remember, the sword is the soul of the samurai. If he forgets it or loses it, he will never be excused.
To even greater acclaim and private envy, Blackthorn took the swords, bowed correctly, and put them in his sash, then bowed again.
Thank you, Toranaga-sama. You do me too much honor. Thank you.
He began to move away, but Toranaga bade him stay.
No, sit down here beside me, Anjin-san.
Toranaga looked back at the militant, fanatic faces of his officers.
Fools, he wanted to shout. Don't you understand that war, whether now or after the rains, would only be disastrous? Any war with Ishido, Ochiba, Yeimon, and their present allies must end in slaughter of all my armies, all of you, and the obliteration of me and all my line. Don't you understand? I've no chance except to wait and hope that Ishido strangles himself.
Instead, he incited them even more, for it was essential to throw his enemy off balance.
Listen, samurai. Soon you'll be able to prove your valor, man to man, as our forefathers proved theirs. I will destroy Ishido and all his traitors, and first will be Ikawa Jikyu. I hereby give all his lands, both provinces of Suruga and Totomi, worth 300,000 koku, to my faithful vassal, Lord Kashigi Yabu, and, with Izu, confirm him and his line as their overlord.
A thunderous acclamation. Yabu was flushed with elation. Omi was banging the floor, shouting just as ecstatically. Now his prize was limitless, for by custom, Yabu's heir would inherit all his lands.
How to kill Yabu without waiting for war?
Then his eyes fixed on the Anjin-san, who was cheering lustily.
Why not let the Anjin-san do it for you? He asked himself,
and laughed aloud at the idiotic thought. Buntaro leaned over and clapped him on the shoulder, amiably misinterpreting the laughter as happiness for Yabu.
Soon you'll get the fief you merit, ne?
Buntaro shouted over the tumult.
You deserve recognition, too. Your ideas and counsel are valuable.
Thank you, Buntaro-san.
Don't worry. We can get through any mountains.
Yes.
Buntaro was a ferocious battle general, and Omi knew they were well matched. Omi the bold strategist, Buntaro the fearless attack leader.
If anyone can get us through the mountains, he can.
There was another burst of cheering as Toranaga ordered sake to be brought, ending the formal meeting. Omi drank his sake and watched Blackthorn drain another cup. His kimono neat, swords correct, Mariko still talking.
You've changed very much, Anjin-san, since that first day, he thought contentedly. Many of your alien ideas are still set firm, but you're almost becoming civilized. What's the matter, Omi-san?
Nothing, nothing, Buntaro-san.
You looked as though an Eta had shoved his buttocks in your face.
Nothing like that, not at all. Just the opposite. I had the beginnings of an idea.
Drink up. Hey, Peach Blossom, bring more sake. My Lord Buntaro's cup is empty.
Chapter 40.
I am instructed to inquire if Kiku-san would be free this evening,
Mariko said.
Oh, so sorry, Lady Toda, but I'm not sure,
Gyoko, the Mama-san, said ingratiatingly.
May I ask if the honored client would require Lady Kiku for the evening or part of it, or perhaps until tomorrow, if she's not already engaged?
The Mama-san was a tall, elegant woman in her early 50s, with a lovely smile. But she drank too much sake, her heart was an abacus, and she possessed a nose that could smell a single piece of silver from 50 li. The two women were in an 8-mat room adjoining Torunaga's private quarters. It had been set aside for Mariko and overlooked, on the other side, a small garden which was enclosed by the first of the inner wall defences. It was raining again, and the droplets sparkled in the flares. Mariko said genteelly,
That would be a matter for the client to decide. Perhaps an arrangement could be made now, which would cover every eventuality. So sorry. Please excuse me that I don't know her availability at once. She's so sought after, Lady Toda. I'm sure you understand. Oh, yes, of course. We're really very fortunate to have such a lady of quality here in Anjiro.
Mariko had accented the Anjiro. She had sent for Gyoko instead of visiting her, as she might possibly have done. And when the woman had arrived, just late enough to make a distinct point, but not enough to be rude, Mariko had been glad of the opportunity to lock horns with so worthy an adversary.
Was the tea house damaged very much? She asked. No, fortunately, apart from some valuable pottery and clothes, though it will cost a small fortune to repair the roof and resettle the garden. It's always so expensive to get things done quickly, don't you find? Yes, it's very trying. In Edo, Mishima, or even in this village. It's so important to have tranquil surroundings, ne? Would the client perhaps honour us at the tea house? Or would he wish Kiku-san to visit him here, if she is available?
Mariko pursed her lips, thinking.
The tea house. Ah, so des.
The Mama-san's real name was Heiko Ichi, first daughter of the wall maker. Her father and his before him had been specialists in making garden walls. For many years she had been a courtesan in Mishima, the capital of Izu, attaining second-class rank. But the gods had smiled upon her, and with gifts from her patron, coupled with an astute business sense, she had made enough money to buy her own contract in good time, and so become a manager of ladies with a tea house of her own, when she was no longer sought after for the fine body and saucy wit with which the gods had endowed her. Now she called herself Gyoko-san, Lady Luck. When she was a fledgling courtesan of 14, she had been given the name Tsukaiko, Lady Snake Charmer. Her owner had explained to her that that special part of man could be likened to a snake, but a snake was lucky, and if she could become a snake charmer in that sense, then she would be hugely successful. Also, the name would make clients laugh, and laughter was essential to this business. Gyoko had never forgotten about laughter.
Sake, Gyoko-san? Thank you. Yes, thank you, Lady Toda.
The maid poured, then Mariko dismissed her. They drank silently for a moment. Mariko refilled the cups.
Such lovely pottery. So elegant, Gyoko said. It's very poor. I'm so sorry we have to use it,
If I can make her available, would...